This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Thursday, the 20th of March. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Earlier this week, I spoke to Joel Pollack, senior editor at large at Breitbart News, and got his thoughts on the campaign to rename Sandton Drive Leila Khalid Drive. Pollack stated firmly that if this goes ahead, the US consulate in Johannesburg will be closed with immediate effect. The DA's motion to stop the renaming has been dismissed. And I thought it appropriate to bring you this video from the official My ANC Instagram profile from the 7th of October, 2024, where the ANC's first deputy secretary, Nomvula Mokonyane, sets out the intention behind the renaming of Sandton Drive. Let's take a listen.
We must, working together, ensure that that campaign of the city of Johannesburg of renaming Sandton Drive into Leila Khalid happens in our lifetime. It has to happen because we want the United States of America's embassy to change their letterheads. When they have their letterheads, they must say United States of America, number one, Leila Khalid Drive in Johannesburg, in Gauteng, because we are sending a message. They cannot dominate us and tell us what to do. It must be in their face. It must be in their computers. It must be in their letterheads. We have to do that, and we must get our young people, our students. We must take them, Comrade Dada. We must have tours, Comrade Chris. Take our youth, take our students to that Sandton Drive and explain why we want to rename that street. Because when they change their streets to Solomon Mahlangu, when they change their streets to Nelson Mandela, when they change their streets to Winnie Mandela in other countries, their children could explain why in a foreign land they will name their street after Nelson Mandela. That's what we must do as part of organizational renewal and uniting the people of South Africa. Abana Masonto.
I asked former Democratic Alliance leader Tony Leon for his thoughts on the situation and specifically his thoughts on Nomvula Mokonyane, the ANC's first deputy secretary herself.
You know, she is almost a sui generis in her general awfulness. She was named by the Zondo Commission as being corrupt and should by rights, if we had a half-competent NPA, you know, be in the criminal dock somewhere in one of the country's courts, but she isn't. The other thing, this is the same lady who was the chief cheerleader of Jacob Zuma. She's never met a president of the ANC she didn't like. Who said when Zuma was destroying our currency and our standing in the world, said, we will pick up the rand, do what you like. I think she accused white people of urinating on the constitution. I mean, most appalling person. But, you know, she's one of the top six officials in the ANC. And once again, the ANC will try, or the government will try and say, well, that's not us, that's the party. But, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Anyway, I see that the DA motion to rescind the renaming was rejected, not incidentally just by the ANC, but Mr. Gayton McKenzie is a big favourite of yours. I see his party voted against the rescission of that. And
not a favourite of mine. Not a favourite of mine.
Saying, he's
interviewed regularly on Wits News. I haven't put my hat in that ring at all.
No. Listen, I'm all in favour of free speech, and apparently he's a compelling speaker. But you know, the ANC, the PA, the PAC, the other ragbag parties in that Joburg Council declined the DA motion. And apparently the renaming is going ahead, or maybe it isn't going ahead, it hasn't been rescinded. Who knows? But once again, This is something that a proactive, even an efficiently reactive government would stop. And they've got the majority in the Joburg Council. And, you know, they're all loyal and disciplined cadres. A message should have gone out. Stop this nonsense. And Nomvula should be, you know, cautioned or disciplined for saying what she said, because it's very harmful to the country. At the end of the day, Bronwyn, postures and gestures in politics, as you know, can be very, very expensive. This kind of rhetoric and this kind of childlike, you know, putting your nose of America in some kind of, you know, opprobrium is not only self-harming, but it's not how adult people behave when confronted with a crisis. And it is a crisis, this. It's not a hiccup, as Cyril Ramaphosa described it. But yet we don't seem to have that kind of behavior as a response to the situation we're in. And I think that's to be regretted.
Last week, Tony penned an article for News 24 in which he highlighted the broader implications for South Africa if the ANC continues to antagonize the United States.
It's not just that America is the big, you know, 900-pound gorilla in the world sandpit. It is that because of America's size, heft, influence, and military, it controls most of the institutions. So there's, because we've run out of money and there's an assumption, well, we could go to the IMF and get a soft loan. Actually, most of the voting shares and certainly the veto power of the IMF, the World Bank, the G7 for that matter, are controlled by the United States or are operated by the United States. So it's not that you can say, well, I'm going to pick a fight with the US. If you pick a fight or lose a fight with the US, there are cascading consequences. And you know, Bronwyn, one thing, for a further article, which I've had to write about the subject, South Africa, or the government at least, the governing party, spends a lot of time relitigating the past. So they're more comfortable when we're talking about apartheid because they were in the moral, on the moral high ground, and their opponents were in the depths below them. Well, you can't run a country based on what happened 30 or 40 years ago. But, you know, I'm old enough and ugly enough, Bronwyn, to have been around in the 1980s when the United States Congress and institutions, both legally and then factually, imposed financial sanctions on South Africa. And, you know, victory has 100 fathers, defeat is an orphan, to quote President Kennedy. But I think one of the fathers of the end of apartheid, one of the causes, one of the biggest causes, was the imposition of financial sanctions against South Africa. Now, I can only speculate here, but if we continue down the road that's already been signposted by recent actions of the government, Rasool, Ramaphosa, and others, then if the end of that road or along the road, we land up with sanctions against us of the financial sort, particularly.
Let's be quite specific there, Tony, because it was Franz Cronje who weighed in with his view here to say that what we need to be very, very cautious about or concerned about is the potential for sanctions against the holding of South African government debt. That is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and we've got what? You would know, BizNews follows these things. We've got about 25% of our debt is held in foreign hands. So if that becomes a target for sanctions, well, you know, we've got a fiscal crisis at the moment and a borrowing crisis and a big deficit. We're going to be in all kinds of pain without the paddle to get out of that sea of pain.
Yesterday, Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews, spoke to Dr. Franz Cronje, South Africa's number one political scientist, who also took time to express his thoughts on the dire consequences that further antagonism towards the United States can have for South Africa, specifically when it comes to South Africa's fixed investment landscape. Let's take a listen.
On the international picture, well, it's exactly what we've been talking about. Why is the ANC holding a VAT baby in its arms? Why is it fighting with the United States? Which U.S. fixed investment levels in Africa have been lagging behind those of China for a decade. And the implications of that for the Americans could be quite serious. There's some really interesting data out last week that China is central to about a third of all the port developments going on in Africa at the moment. Africa's got 50 votes on UN fora. The data network, Africa's got more cities of 1 million inhabitants than Europe and America combined. An economy is growing faster than the developed outside of South Africa. We're the laggard of the continent, growing very quickly. This is somewhere where you wish to be present. When ISIS was displaced from the Middle East, terrorism takes root in Africa. The terror threat indices scores, which measure the extent to which a country is has a terror presence and threat, for many African countries are now higher than the old Middle Eastern staples. So the U.S. does have an interest. I was reprimanded in Washington on my last visit for telling Americans what their interests in Africa are. So I do that advisedly by friends, incidentally, who said, you don't come here and tell us why we need you, which really is to show how the culture there has changed. The America is behind the curve on fixed investment. If it wants to catch up to China continent-wide on fixed investment, let's say over the next decade, the quantum of dollars it would need to invest, this is amazing, and let's say we could convince it to focus those on us over here, would be sufficient to close our fixed investment gap to 25%. And we'd be growing at 4%, and we'd be fine, the ANC would be back at 60%, most likely. Now, why, Alec, are we fighting? Where will the capital come from to close the fixed investment gap? At 20-1, the dollar can do it. But our foreign policy is to... This wasn't the ambassador off on some gambit of his own. You saw that in Mr. Ramaphosa's letter in Foreign Affairs or Foreign Policy or whatever it was, and his backing of South Africa's formation of the Hague Group. The presidency and foreign affairs here had positioned itself in the Trump administration to be the spear point of an effort to take on the United States and bring it down. It is mad. It is not in our best interest. It's got nothing to do with the South African national interest. But madness seems to be the theme of the season. We're gonna fight the great Satan in the US, and we're gonna increase taxes at home. And on the back of that, the ANC is going to get back its political majority. What an extraordinary kind of time, a thing just to watch.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Yesterday, Alec spoke to Josh Mavisky from the Hudson Institute, which is a think tank based in Washington, has been in existence for more than 50 years, and is focused on foreign policy. Alec asked Josh for his thoughts direct from Washington on the perception of the relationship between South Africa and the United States.
I think it started to matter because the ANC thrust South Africa into the big boy league, let's say. By bringing the case against Israel at the ICJ, they suddenly began playing very aggressively on one side of a high-stakes geopolitical competition. Israel is, this is no surprise, it is one of the United States' very closest allies. It's the only democracy in the Middle East. It's really the only pro-American country in the Middle East. There's a large Jewish population in the United States. It's one of the sadly, one of the few countries in the world where Jews mostly feel safe. So when South Africa so aggressively inserted itself into this competition, the United States noticed. And then they also inserted themselves a little bit into the Russia-Ukraine issue by leading a quixotic delegation of African heads of state to negotiate peace between Putin and Zelensky. Again, it was quixotic and foolish. But also President Ramaphosa visited separately Moscow separately, where he praised President Putin, called Russia a staunch ally, etc. So you're right. When South Africa was not aggressively inserting itself into these high stakes geopolitical contests, I think the United States was both not noticing, and if it did notice some of the hostility coming out of the ANC, the U.S. could shrug it off. But again, because it suddenly threw its lot in very aggressively, very openly, very publicly, with one side of a highly contentious, highly important geopolitical issue, the United States could no longer ignore what was going on.
Mavisky also penned an article for the Hudson Institute explaining the potential power of individual sanctions when it comes to bringing order to the realm of foreign policy.
Targeted sanctions are the way to go in situations like this. And it also, not only I think is it a more effective approach, but also avoids hurting the wrong people. I don't want collateral damage from what the United States is doing in South Africa, because, you know, the ordinary people, they're not the cause of what's going on in the South African government. So it's almost a question of justice as well. I think it's a central component of a true understanding of justice that the people who do the wrong things are the ones who should suffer the consequences as much as possible. We live in an imperfect world, so it's not always how it works out, but I think it's a good guiding precept.
How do you select those people for sanction? And what sanction would you put onto them?
Yeah, well, so as I wrote in my piece, South Africa is a target-rich environment for American sanctions for a bunch of reasons. One is the United States does have an authority called the Global Magnitsky Sanctions Act, which, or GLOMAG for short, which targets human rights abuses and corruption. So right away, given what we know about ANC corruption, that means GLOMAG would probably apply to any number of ANC officials. And the U.S. itself wouldn't even have to do a whole lot of work to find the right people, because the South Africans have already done a lot of this work with the Zondo Commission, where they named names of highly corrupt senior ANC officials. So I think if you're building a profile of the type of person that the United States should sanction, and I lay this out in my piece, it is a senior person. Sometimes we make the mistake of going after less senior, mid-level people. I think we intend it as a warning, but oftentimes that is received as a lack of seriousness. So you go after senior people to demonstrate your seriousness. You go after people who are corrupt. Again, that's pretty easy. And then given the amount of Hamas, Hezbollah, ISIS funding that flows through or originates in South Africa, it's possible that there are ANC officials linked to that. So that would be another checkbox that would be really useful if you can draw those, if you can discover those links or unearth those links. There's also sanctioned Russian oligarchs operating in South Africa right now. Victor Wexelsberg, who I referenced in the piece, who, it's a matter of public record, has contributed to the ANC. So I think that would be a fairly easy case to build. So that's the and people who have been leading the anti-American charge. Again, there's a couple different people here who immediately spring to mind. So that's the profile that I think the U.S. should go after. And hopefully, if you go after that group of people and you demonstrate the United States is deadly serious about this, and you demonstrate the extreme impact that targeted sanctions like this can have on somebody's wealth and their ability to move freely, that might focus minds within the ANC.
The BizNews conference took place in Hermanus, the 7th BizNews conference, between the 10th and 14th of March. Paul Mashatile, South Africa's deputy president, was a guest speaker, and he spent some time in his address taking the audience through South Africa-US relations from his perspective.
Let me deal with another issue that is pertinent in everybody's mind, and it's our relationship with the United States of America. Now, one of the things that most of you will probably be aware of is that there will be a discontinuation of the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, which we call it PEFA. Funding. Now, this funding was part of the funding that we were using for HIV, AIDS, TB, and other diseases program. I think if I recall the figures, about 8 billion rand that was coming from the U.S. Now, the new administration in the U.S., is discontinuing this grant as we speak. You'll recall that this grant was basically started by President George W. Bush in 2003. Now, once discontinued, it means that there will be a lot of challenges in dealing with this issue. However, as South Africa, we have been budgeting for dealing with issues of HIV and AIDS. So the withdrawal of PEFA, whilst it will be a big challenge to us, we will continue to see how we can assist the vulnerable groups in this sector to deal with issues of TB, HIV and AIDS, and so on. So the Minister of Finance is looking at how to rearrange our budget in such a way that we are able as a country to continue to deal with this challenge. Obviously, as I say, we will lose the 8 billion out of the, I think it's 48 billion or so that we use, but we'll continue as South Africa to provide resources there. The second issue is AGOA, that the new administration want to review this. We think that AGOA is very important for businesses in South Africa, but also particularly the farmers. So if it's discontinued, it will affect us negatively. The loss of AGOA benefits, in our view, would have most devastating effect on South African farmers and also agricultural workers, because the AGOA is presently providing support to South Africa's agriculture and manufacturing sectors, which is expected to generate about $21 billion in trade with the United States. So the position we have taken now as the cabinet is that we should engage with the new administration in the U.S. The president was intending to send a team of ministers to go and meet with the new administration to discuss these issues. Because our position is that we should continue to maintain strong bilateral relations with the United States. And most importantly, as a country, we are committed to improving mutually beneficial trade, continue our political and diplomatic relations with the U.S. As we look to the future, we must also consider diversifying our export markets to lessen our reliance on a single trading partner and to limit the kind of perils that we face. So the president said, look, it's okay, we'll send a delegation there, but let's also you know, look to other markets as well, and engage with those. So there will be delegations that will go to China, Russia, India. As we speak today, the president is co-chairing the EU-South Africa summit here in Cape Town to discuss how we strengthen relations with the EU, the whole European zone, discuss how we can improve trade. And it's good that the European Union itself wanted to come to South Africa to engage with us. And that is happening as we speak today.
That full address by the Deputy President of South Africa, Paul Mashatile, is available on the BizNews TV YouTube channel. And also the subsequent interview that Alec Hogg, the founder of BizNews, conducted with the Deputy President of South Africa. Some hard-hitting questions that Alec asked the Deputy President to address. That brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context, both local and global. Thanks, as always, for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.